just a moment to dial in. And I will just say that we've had awesome acceptance, or whatever you want to call it, on Podbean. We've been having a lot of downloads and visits to that site, as well as on our website. If you go to whyagain.org and then click on Kaboris underneath it, you will see there is a section that says Enlightenment Study. And in that are the archives since we started. I think today we are on day 60. So we have a couple of hands up, but let's give Michael just a moment to dial in, and then we'll take our callers. So we are glad that you've joined us. And so Michael's dialing in. We do have two callers already with hands up.
Awesome.
So hang on just a moment, and we will get your microphones turned on, and we'll be glad to hear your comments or address any questions that you have. I did check. Michael said that if you were on the list where he sent the Easter story out, that it has been edited again. And so as he's editing it, you should get the automatic updates. When he finishes, we will have that on the website. We'll also be sending out a newsletter that'll have it in it, as well as the announcements of, you know, Michael's going to be in Sarasota, Florida, the first of part of May. And some information then also about the quantum still point intensives that he's doing. Those are personal one-on-one three-day intensives here in Bristol, Virginia. And so if you need more information on that, it's actually already on the website, but we will be sending out a newsletter. So if you are not on our mailing list and you want to get the newsletter, go to the website, whyagain.org, and scroll all the way to the bottom, and you'll see a thing that says sign in to be in our newsletter and in our correspondence. And what that is you're giving us permission to send it to you. And that way you can't say that we bombarded your email and that you didn't request it. So we do need you to do that. You can also drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and give me your name and email address, and I will add you to the list from here. We use a program called Constant Contact. So when you do it on the website, it automatically adds you to the contact list, and that's where the email comes out of. So there's no question of spam or whatever. And so either way, let us know. Get on the mailing list. That newsletter will be going out as soon as he completes this article. And he's with us now, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. There are a couple of other things that need to come together, too. There's a physician in Florida that had invited me to come down and do a weekend series of workshops, which we're going to do the end of May, pardon me, the first week of May. We're still working on seeing if we can solidify a date. He's on Instagram, and we're going to do an Instagram interview, so hopefully we'll get that date set, and we'll get that off to you, so if you want to listen to that, you'll be able to do it. And if you want to make plans to be in Sarasota, we're going to do Why Is This Happening to Me Again on Friday, the last Friday of May.
Not the last Friday.
Okay, good. Glad you got it. I don't have it in front of me.
We're going to be there. You are going to be there on Friday, May the 3rd, and Saturday, May the 4th, and Sunday, May the 5th.
I was thinking it was before that we jumped into May, but great. Okay, so we'll be there in May. So hopefully the newsletter will contain a link or information about when Dr. John Laurence and I will be doing an Instagram interview, and with the information on that. And this article on Easter is growing. It's actually probably going to take me 2 years to finish it, so I'll keep renewing it as we go. I've decided I'm going to expand it out through the whole body. Basically, it's Yeshua in the first person saying, here's what I meant, here's what I said, here's why it's important. And so if you look at it today, actually, give it 24 hours, I've got a new edit of it ready to paste in there, probably later. Maybe I'll do it before I finish the garden this morning. I was out in the dirt finding some new plants and working on a new native species bed that we're creating for native species plants and native habitat growing. So lots of things going on, but that article will ultimately become a book that I think will be titled, Will the Real Yeshua Please Stand Up? And we're going to look at why his Aramaic words are important. You know, when the ancient teachings say the power of life and death is in your words, is in the tongue, it might be important to make sure you got the right words. Just, you know, and I'll tell you, if Yeshua said in most of what happens in the Western world in his name today, he'd say that is all Greek to me. And I mean, really, seriously, so far out of line. So inadequate in giving people the benefit and the advantage of what this amazing teaching is, and why he doesn't say, no, no thoughts of his fault. Yeah, see, him. He said, my words, they're your perfect life. Now, you go, well, hey, why? How does that work? What does that got to do? Well, if you understand a thing called regulatory speech, you understand that words literally regulate cellular chemistry. They regulate emotions. They regulate perception. And they regulate your creative process. So if you were brought up in a world with words of death, hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, blame, drama, and trauma, you're dying and you expect to die. My offering is you can reverse that. You don't have to do that. But you're going to have to change your whole vocabulary. You're going to have to change your whole conceptual structure. It is a process. It takes time. And so this article is going to go step by step through that whole process. So that's what we're working on. And so let's say hello to our callers.
All right. The first one, I don't have this number in my phone book, so not sure who it is, but we want to welcome 212. You're on the air.
It's a pleasure to speak to you. Hi, Jeannie. How are you?
I am good. Who we got?
My name is Bobby. And Dr. Michael, I have some dear friends who are big fans of the show, of both you and Jeannie. Could you say hello to my friends? They've been through a lot. Can you just say hello to Mrs. Dice and her son, Andrew?
Well, Andrew and Mrs. Dice, we not only say hello, but we definitely extend our love in your direction and our support and our caring. And, you know, knowing that we live in an energetic world,
is, you know, mothers do a lot. She's suffering from depression and whatnot. And I actually turned her on to the book A Course in Miracles, which is
right.
Just so wonderful, unbelievable. But see, the thing is, my mom, she used to laugh all the time, and I wanted to lift her spirits. And she happens to be a fan of, like, comedy. You know, she loved Richard Pryor, she loved Chris Rock, she loved Andrew Dice Clay, one of her favorites, you know, and he's pretty vulgar. So my question to you is, I wanted to really lift up her spirits and write, like, a funny Andrew Dice Clay type of poem for Mother's Day, and I wanted to get your take on that.
Well, unfortunately, I don't know who Andrew Dice Clay is, so I can't really make much of a comment, but. You know, there's a story, if Jeannie has she's got your phone number, if you receive texts on it, I'll gladly send it to you. There's a story that we usually read on Mother's Day that's really, it's quite humorously written, and it's about a woman who goes into the registrar's office to register a piece of property, and when she says she's a housewife, she's talked down to, and the whole turnaround of that. So if I have your permission, I'll send you a copy of that.
That'd be wonderful.
That might be a foundation for what you're talking about doing. I'll give you some ideas.
Yeah, well, just Andrew Dice Clay was known for saying dirty nursery rhymes. That was
okay.
Yeah. So okay. And it was silly. So I wrote he was very vulgar, so I wrote Happy Mother's Day, Hickory Dickory Dock.
Well, we're not interested in doing anything vulgar on the show.
Okay, so if it's about what he's doing, I'd rather let it go if you don't mind.
I just disconnected him.
Thank you.
Our next hand up is Michael Tatey, 770. You're on the air.
Hello. Welcome, young man. Hey, good to hear your voice. How do you be?
I'm doing wonderful. Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Michael.
Delighted to hear from you. Wondering, you've been in my mind since you were here visiting, and just been tapping in, sending energy in your direction, and wondering how you're doing.
Much appreciated. I've been wanting to call in for a bit, give you an update, and let you know how wonderful I am doing, and much appreciative of my visit there.
Tell us what's happening. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, just doing well, and of course, lots of questions, but truly wanted to extend my appreciation for that wonderful 3-day visit I had with you all. And Michael, things are still
one of the things I was sharing. Good. One of the things I was sharing, Michael, last week, and I wasn't sure I had the details of it exactly, but the last time we talked, you had told me about the change in the status of headaches as a result of that mini intensive. And so maybe give us more accurate detail on where you were with headaches, what you'd done about trying to deal with headaches, and then what happened as a result of that 3 days. And, of course, everything else you've been doing.
So I've been doing a lot and pursuing a lot for many years. And back 4 or 5 years ago, I used to have headaches, and they would last sometimes up to 3 days and just quite intense. And been working at many, many things and have gotten that down quite extensively. However, before I came to see you last month, would still have a headache once or twice a month, would last a day. And there's so much improved over a few years ago. However,
right.
I had one since I met with you, and you assisted me so much in the energy work and in your modalities. And that lasted for 3 hours. And I'm trying to recall, that was a couple weeks ago, and nothing since, which is a wonderful goal. So a great improvement. And like I say,
things
are rolling very nicely. So just wanted to extend
that. If you go back to the once or twice a month that would last for a day, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would the level of pain have been with those headaches? Generally.
In the 4 to 6 range.
Okay. And then the one that you have had since we worked, it diminished in 3 hours, what would the scale of that be?
Yeah, that's the only one, and I would say that's in the 1 to 2 range. Very, very low.
Oh, that's awesome. Nice.
Yeah, so things are definitely moving in the right direction, and I'm certain my bone structure is moving in the right direction, and it's just really great.
Well, I hold that you had your last headache, and that from here on out, the structure of your cranium, your jaw, your teeth, your ability to speak, your ability to think, and the comfort in your tissue structure is just going to do improvement upon improvement upon improvement until it gets back to what it was designed to be originally, which was just feeling awesome and supporting you living in true physiological, mental, emotional joy.
Wonderful. I certainly appreciate that and looking forward to that myself. So, very.
Yay. Well, any questions on your mind for today?
Oh, Rob, I have something to share. I heard Robert Edward Grant. Have you ever listened to Does that name ring a bell?
No, I haven't heard of him.
He had said something, and it really brought me back to your work. He was explaining how everything that happens to us, we should well be on the course and say, why did I choose that happened? And it just popped in my mind. I wanted to share it with you. It brings me right back to the title of your book and your work. Why is this happening to me again? Why did I choose it? Why is this happening to me again? It's just interesting correlation.
There's a line in my book that invites people to just think about, you know, what have I been doing in my life to produce this result? And whatever it is, am I willing to face it and change it?
Change it, yeah. So powerful, Dave. Wow. Yeah, I'm hearing.
So go for it. What's the next thought you have on your mind?
In more and more people's work, I continue to make these connections and hearing things. So the next portion, I think you touched on it just a little bit earlier, is regulatory speech. And since I've been blessed to meet you and then Jeannie back almost 2 years ago now, and meet the many people that are also involved in your work, I had a long conversation with one recently, and it was noted, and I realized this, that my regulatory speech is not where it needs to be. And you and I have had that conversation in the past also. So that's a challenge, and it's something I believe I want to tackle, you know, in a fairly soon manner. So how does one do that? What are the procedures? For instance, the person I was speaking with that knows your work very well was suggesting worksheets. And yeah, I've done a bit of that work. Although I know, I believe I've heard you say there's a course in regulatory speech, and I'm wondering if that might be a better option, because I'm one that wants to get right out there and tackle things. So wondering your thoughts about my personal challenge with regulatory speech and the best way and an efficient way to tackle that and move forward, even up to another level.
Well, you'll notice that since you become involved in this work, the way you think about things has changed significantly, right?
Yes, it has.
Say, for instance, something like family conflicts or your own health or when you look at the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Your thinking's changed, right?
Most definitely.
So when your thinking changes, your speech changes. The speech is just a representation of thought. And regulatory speech as an idea is the recognition that the thoughts we think, if we start from the baseline, let's go to, first of all, let's start with physics. Let's talk about Albert Einstein. On such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. So Einstein says, matter doesn't exist. And then he says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. So once you realize those two things are true, the speech about separateness begins to disappear. And the speech about how how we think of ourselves in relationship to what appear to be others who are in truth single ourselves in our own body. Literally, when they talked about, the ancients talked about the mystical body of Christ, they weren't talking about some airy fairy pie in the sky thing. They were saying the same thing as Einstein. We look in our brains, and our brains generate these pictures that we're separate because our language tells us we're separate. In fact, if you look at child psychology, they'll tell us that it's a really important part of development to realize that you're not part of everything around you and speak of yourself as a separate entity. It's the teaching of the world. And what if Einstein's correct, what does that teaching mean? It means that we're being taught to lie to ourselves. And we do it with thought. And, of course, the representation of thought is speech. Now, I'll go to the opening words in the book of John, where we're told by the Greeks that it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. And what it says in Aramaic is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. Now, let's take that into the cell biologist laboratory and listen to Bruce Lipton, cell biologist, taught in several different medical schools. And he shows that in the lab, when we think a thought, we take that non-physical energy, Einstein was talking about, it's all energy, we reduce it in its rate of vibration by bringing it into the world of thought, and now all of a sudden there's a molecule in our bodies, solidified, becoming matter. That molecule circulates around, and the molecule is nothing but a solidified piece of mind energy, a solidified thought. That mind energy circulates around in your structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. It lands on the cell. Now let's imagine that we are microbes inside of the cell, and we hear this neuropeptide, this solidified thought, or relatively solidified thought, land on a receptor site on our cell, and we look up and we watch, and what we would see from inside the cell is what you and I would call chemistry. Mind energy is becoming flesh. Literally, in the cell, that neuropeptide, when inserted in the cell, becomes chemistry. Now, Bruce Lipton talks about that as the cell replicates the neuropeptide. I don't believe, you know, my background's on electronics, and, you know, the signal comes into the TV set. The TV does not replicate the signal that comes into the antenna. The TV reflects the signal that comes in. I don't believe this cell is replicating, but it is reflecting what has been inserted into it as what we call chemistry. And the words are written that I asked that he did a group of disciples who the word in the scripture speaks about. Many of them walked away saying, too hard a saying, who can understand? And they never came back. But my take is, the ask is that we develop the skill of reversing that whole process of thoughtlessly letting thoughts go through our minds. You know, there's a thought on a billboard, and that becomes our thought, and the thought becomes our speech, and the speech becomes our physiology, and what goes into our physiology in speech regulates our behavior. And if the billboard's about, you know, hey, look, drink this wonderful fluid that will get you drunk and destroy your body and your relationships, and people put that into speech, and it regulates their behavior. So the ask I hear is, learn to enter into, to move into your own cellular structure, become receptive to whatever is stored there,
not only from your own speech, from your own neuropeptide activity, but that of your generations that are stored there. Learn to bring that material, which sometimes is very traumatic and very painful, horrific. You know, you look historically at what's happened to people in our bloodlines and what's in our structures, and some of it's pretty heavy duty. The ask is to learn to reverse that process, to literally pull those energetic patterns out of the cell, be sensitive to them, develop the ability to read what they mean, develop the brain cells to understand what they mean, and be able to embrace them while you keep love present in your mind. And what will happen, that which has become flesh in you will dissolve. On the way out, it is not going to be Dr. Feelgood, because the energy going in created certain symptoms, and the energy coming out is going to create exactly the same symptoms. The symptoms of disease and the symptoms of healing are absolutely identical. One of the reasons, my take, why people shy away from and really don't want to do worksheets is because that's what the worksheet empowers us to do. And most people don't want to look there, don't want to deal with that, don't want to feel that, don't want to pull out of their own structure what is literally energetically killing them. Oh, they want to, but they want it done for them. And they don't want to have to go through the process and the experience of dealing with those things. So my offering would be that if you went back to day one, to the first radio show we did 14 years ago, and you listened 5 days a week, an hour a day for the last 14 years, the only thing I would address would be your question. Here's how you do it. It's every skill we've got. It's every tool we've got. So it's the commitment. It's the power person worksheet. It's the codependence worksheet. It's the forgiveness process. It's the still point breathing. It's the responsibility communication. And every tool has as its objective being able to own, you know, take a look at why has your tissue structure changed after all those years of chasing, and you shared with me you were in the airline industry, so you flew back and forth all over the country to all kinds of experts. Why did your chemistry change, quote-unquote chemistry change, more in 3 days than it had in those years? What happened? The other aspect of it is to be able to open our physiology and access, and usually it takes a measure of support, access and remove those energetic patterns. And oftentimes when energetic patterns of pain and trauma come up, the habit, the generational habit, is just to fall into harmony with them, act as though they're true and ours, and function out of them. So having support there, part of the process is in doing, like say for instance, something like that 3-day intensive or this radio show, everything we do is how do we work to undo what never belonged and not get trapped in it when it comes up. So every tool, I mean, that's been the only objective of everything we've done for a half a century in this regard. There's a wonderful passage in A Course in Miracles where it talks about words and how we try to use words to represent things and do things that words weren't meant to represent and weren't meant to do. And what the Course talks about is that words, one, it informs us what words are. Let's say, for instance, you and I have an interaction, and I meet you, we have this interaction, and my mind produces a picture that it paints on the inside of my eyeballs. Based on what you resonate in me, I see a body, and I think I'm looking at you. If I were actually seeing you, I'd see a whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. I would not see a body. There's no such thing as a body. Einstein, there's no such thing as matter. But my brain, according to what you resonated me, produces a picture, a construct called perception. And that perception, I'm, I'm, I think I'm looking at it out there, but the truth is it's painted on the inside of my eyeballs. And that's my brain's representation of you. Now, if you do something that resonates, something that I'm in denial and dissociation of, and up comes my blaming of you because I'm in denial, then I'm going to see a picture where you did to me what it is that hurt me. And when I realize that that picture is a construct painted on the inside of my eyeballs by my brain, I take responsibility for it and I dissolve it. I bring the root of it forward, literally out of the deepest parts of my cellular structure, and in the presence of love, because I'm in the practice of holding love present, I can allow those energetic patterns to move forward, and rather than getting lost in them, rather than reinforcing them, rather than doing what my generations have done, and that is just jump on it and go, you know, play it out like it's all your fault, I'm going to own and move those patterns through and out of me using each and every one of the tools until I become free of it. And what the Course talks about words, that the only real use, and if you listen over the years to this radio show, you'll notice that when somebody comes on the show and they've got a challenge, basically what I do is I simply point out how their words are in error. And that the error isn't the truth about them or the people they're in relationship with. And when we can correct those errors, then we think differently about them and about ourselves. Our mind energy is different. Our literal, what we, in the world where we call it chemistry, our chemistry is different. And the descriptors we use for those energies moving in us, called our words, change. They shift. So it's a whole process. It isn't, you know, I point over into this corner, I go there, if you just do what's over there in that corner. But what the ancients said, understanding that in order to produce this hologram in the mind called reality, and this interaction, this world that we experience and live in, it takes a giant amount of input from 1,000 different directions. Like, for instance, they did a research project in a prison. Actually, they did this in a few different prisons over the years. But they were trying to deal with violence in the prisons. And one of the things they found had the most profound effect on getting rid of violence in the prisons was they removed sugar from the diet of the inmates. Removing sugar will change your speech. That's called being holy. And holy isn't being down on our knees with our hands folded. It's understanding each impact, each aspect of life that energetically produces the result we call our perception, our words, etc. And it's developing the skill and the ability to address from every direction, literally every energetic influence, and one by one, move in the direction of correction. Not necessarily correct, because oftentimes, if people, let's say there's a generational pattern, let's take that idea of sugar. Sugar is an anesthetic, sugar is a drug. People get addicted to the drug. We get a person that's a heavy-duty sugar addict, and they, all of a sudden, when they cut themselves off of all sugar, and say, that's it, I'm never going to eat sugar again, they will go through some horrendous symptoms, and they will probably, like the pendulum swings way over to one side, when that pendulum starts to stop in the other direction, bang, they're going to get lost in it again. So, you know, doing shift and change in moderation in every way, shape, and form, what do you do with your dietary regimen, what do you do with your thinking, what do you do with your breathing, what do you do with the water you eat, the food you eat, pardon me, the water you drink, the food you eat, the thoughts you think, the energetic patterns you expose yourself to. Now, one of the things that Jeannie and I often do, like, we have a television in our bedroom, and at night we'll watch a movie. And oftentimes we'll watch some pretty violent stuff. There was a time when I would not go in and watch, I would not watch a violent movie. The at the end of the evening, when we've watched this movie, we will both join in asking Ruka, whatever was resonated in us through this film, we ask you as we sleep, as we breathe, to remove it, free us from it. Mm-hmm. So even watching those movies become an opportunity to look at what does this resonate in me, what do I need to forgive, and can I hold a space of love? Can I stay connected to myself as active present love as I watch this happen on the screen or I watch this happen in my life? And, you know, it's a constitutional growth. It's a transition. Literally, you know, if you listen to Yeshua, he says, in order for you, being, to live, love, created essence that you are, to live, you, non-being, hostility and fear-based self, have to die. It's transition. It's transitioning from the self that the world has pounded into us and taught we are, you know, the power person dynamics, you're broken, there's something wrong with you, no, don't you dare cry, or I'll give you something to cry for, you know, through all the messages, all the mind energy that comes in and literally becomes our physiology and literally reflects when resonated into activity as a false image of ourselves. That self has got to go. It's got to be dissolved. Well, how do you do that, Michael? Go back to day one of the radio show and I never talk about anything else. That it's every tool applied in every arena.
My guess is that all my dysfunctional thinking over years and maybe even in utero, passed on from mom, was stored in the areas that you worked on energetically when I was with you. And that work released at least some of that trauma to have a functional life at this point. Would that be fair?
That would be, and it works at a level where nobody could do that for themselves. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get that kind of shift in physiology, and it also works with the core of the antenna of the body to realign it so it comes into its proper range of motion, which, because at the core of it, there are places where we hold so tightly that on one's own, it's next to impossible to get to open, or it's a very, very long-term process. And yeah. So moving into that level of alignment and intensity is what, I don't know how to quantify it, but takes people, what might take 20 years to do can be done in 3 days. Or, but I mean, I've watched people where I've used those tools, and you know, tools that I don't use in a normal intensive because it's not just not something that can be done in that setting. And I watch people make changes that most people would never make in their whole lives. Mm-hmm. And then another big part of the process is the willingness. Am I willing to go there? Am I willing to feel this and move through this? You know, one of the, back about 43 years, whatever it was, discovered for me from there in my medical training and, you know, things that I would do, the seminars and such that I would do over the last 4+ decades, is I've always looked for what takes people into still point, what enhances the still point, and that's what became the energy field work that we teach in our intensives, and that's what I use when I'm working with people one-on-one. And, you know, as I say, some of the tools that I used with you in that 3-day
So the idea of why, how I got in this situation I find myself in life, and many others, if not all others, to some degree, we have to
absolutely
do the work.
All of us.
All of us, yeah. And we have to do the work to come out of that, to put that behind us and move forward. And a huge part of this, it seems, is our speech from dysfunctional thinking.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. And it's changing the mind energy.
Changing the mind energy. And I see where worksheets definitely do that and experience that, thankfully. So what would be, well, first thing I got is the regulatory speech, is that a separate course or is that a collection of courses? I'm still wondering where that
regulatory speech, the focus on regulatory speech comes in our Laws of Living Intensive.
Okay, so it's in the Laws of Living. Okay.
It's not a separate course, but it's a focal point of much of Laws of Living.
Okay. So without taking that at the moment, the best way to continue to improve my thinking is with the worksheet process. And
every tool we've given you.
I was just going to say also the mind shifters and things
Yes,
makes sense.
You know, since, you know, in the past we've had the conversation that many of the things that you're dealing with are family dynamics and relationship issues. And we've had the conversation that there is the codependence and interdependence self-study intensive that would enhance your acquaintance with the whole picture on a totally different level than, you know, the pieces that we've gotten, you know, when we've connected and moved through things over the years. That becomes a more specific, directed presentation of how the material we do on codependence to interdependence, healing through relationships, communication, how those things relate as a whole. So I think that if you're looking for, you know, what's the next step I can do, I would suggest, yes, Laws of Living would be wonderful, and we don't have one scheduled at this point. I don't know when we're going to do another one. We talked about doing one online, but we just haven't had enough demand for it. But I think you'd find stepping into the codependence to interdependence communication practicum. That's 90 hours of video work. That's a systematic presentation of the whole. In the same way that Laws of Living is a systematic presentation of the whole body of work from the perspective of law, which in Aramaic means the way things work. Codependence to interdependence intensive is a systematic presentation of the way the whole body of work relates to relationships and how we get stuck in our interactions in relationships. So I think that would be, if you're looking for, okay, there's something I want to step into that I can move forward in a powerful way, I think that would be your next step.
Yes, I appreciate that. And that's what I'm thinking. And to come back to Bristol at some point where we can talk more about that. I would like to experience
yes.
even next level with your one-on-one work. It was amazing. And as what is the term you've used in the past? And I kind of chuckle, but I actually experienced that. It's not Dr. Feelgood. There were times during that it wasn't Dr. Feelgood, but what was on the other side of that was amazing. And
let me ask
again,
the question.
Grateful. Yes.
In terms of your experience, and I'm thinking this because I just finished working with a gentleman a few days ago, and this gentleman had been acquainted with the work for many years, and one of the things he was had been noticing over the period of the last 15 years or so was that his short-term memory was disappearing. It was a major concern for him, so it's something he'd worked on. And literally, you know, the last day we completed, he came by and visited here. We sat and chatted a little bit before he left. And he noticed himself remembering words that otherwise he would be fishing for, that his short-term memory wasn't holding on to. And I'm asking that question, just wondering if you've noticed anything with memory. I'm kind of, you know, starting to survey what kind of results people are getting. Have you noticed anything with memory since we worked?
I will consider
that. A better way to ask the question might be, do you have any challenges in that regard?
Well, I know I did in the past. To answer your question, since the 3-day intensive, I've not really noticed anything. I'm going to ponder on that a little bit more in the next few days, and not something I've really thought about. However, I would like to take this back a year to maybe a little bit more ago. I was struggling, and I'm sure you see the difference as much as we've spoken on and off the show. I would be struggling with a concentration and things along those lines, which somewhat related to the memory, and that has improved greatly over the last year. And a lot of that I'm just doing this work and, you know, experiencing the healing from it. So can't say anything definitive over the last month, but definitely over the last year or so.
Sweet. Awesome.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that is the ability to relax more and just get into that quiet space really helps.
Well, when you realize that thinking, concentration, has to do with the firing of brain cells, and if there are energetic patterns that we haven't dealt with that are resonating around us and we haven't worked through them, that's going to affect everything to do with thinking and function and concentration and, you know, ability to get things done. Because when you clear out the gunk that's, you know, just muddying up the water's a whole lot clearer. It's a whole lot easier to swim. So
I like that.
So that makes perfect sense.
I like that. Yeah, much different person than almost 2 years ago. I can feel it, sense it, and
think about the relationships that have been a challenge to you in the past, and just look at how your conversation has changed in those relationships. And you've shared some of that with me, challenges with your brother. You shared with me, and you know, notice the change in your regulatory speech. Your conversation with your brother changed totally last time you saw him from what it had been, as I understand it, like forever before then. That's
right.
Your regulatory speech changing.
Right. Big difference. Very nice.
Sweet. Awesome.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, switching gears a bit, and I appreciate bringing you through this situation today, and looking more at the codependence and interdependence. So I thought about something else, and I'm not quite sure what hit my memory on this one. But I believe I heard you mention in the past was in the stories in the Bible that Joshua really spoke in parables. Do you think the other stories in the Bible are possible parables, and what I'm really thinking about is the Adam and Eve story, for instance. Do you or others ever relate that to being a parable in itself?
My offering would be that the whole of the scriptures are an allegory for life. Were there actual factual historic events in it? Yes. But in each case, there are layers and levels of meaning. And when you can, you know, an event happens in the scriptures. Was it historical? Well, it looks like it probably was. We don't know 100%. But if I'm sitting here and, you know, King Hezekiah had an interaction with one of his slaves, and all of a sudden, you know, this changed, and I sit there and I'm breathing, and I go, wow, I've done to that. I treated people around me just like King Hezekiah did, and what a mistake it's been. Whew, I can breathe into that, and I can feel the grief of what I did, and process through that grief. That story just turned into a metaphor for my life. And when I can receive those life lessons, I'll benefit from them in a whole different way than everything needs to be literal in ABC. You know, and in particular, the Aramaic language. The Aramaic language, first of all, as languages go, and I don't remember the stats of it, but there are very few words in the Aramaic language. And there are idioms on top of idioms on top of idioms on top of idioms. And if I don't know the meaning of an idiom, and I try to take the literal words, it doesn't make any sense. And there are just so many places where, when you have the idiom, you know, a camel can go through the eye of a needle. Easier than a rich man. How stupid is it that a camel is going to go through the eye of a needle? Until you realize that, you know, Jerusalem was a gated city, and there were hospitable people. They didn't want to leave people out there in the desert by themselves. It could be dangerous. So they had a small gate. It was called the eye of the needle. And it was so small that an invading army couldn't get in and attack them, but they wanted to be hospitable, and if a neighbor came, you know, even if it were an enemy, that the neighbor could get in the city. But what the neighbor would have to do would be unload all of the you know, the luggage that was on the camel. They'd have to force the camel down on its knees and force it through the eye of the needle, the gate of the city. The whole Aramaic is filled with stuff like that, and people are still trying to figure out how you're going to get your camel through a knitting needle or a sewing needle.
It's so beautiful.
So the Aramaic language is just rife with those, and without that knowledge, there's just so many things that just don't make any sense. That, to me, is one of the things that convinced me of the primacy of the Aramaic, because things just... You take it in Greek and you go, how do I get it count? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But then when you go back and you go, now it makes sense. It's clear that the Greek with thinking about a physical camel going through a sewing needle is not the meaning. And therefore, the prime, the original, had to be the Aramaic. And there's just so many cases where when you start looking time after time after time, this statement that doesn't make much or any real sense. Well, that's pretty simple and straightforward.
Yeah, it's a beautiful way to think, rethink about it. And I appreciate you sharing that. And the reason I asked is that has become where I personally, what I also personally believe about the Bible. And after studying it many years, way before we even met, I now look at it differently, and even differently since learning more about the Aramaic, which I'm grateful to learn from your work. I was out on the lawn. I took about an hour the other day during the eclipse, and I was out there just grounding on the lawn and experiencing the eclipse. And I thought about the Adam and Eve story, and this is, I don't know if this is way out there or not, but I thought, okay, that's a story. Where is it going? What am I learning from this? And I thought about the two hemispheres of the brain. One side being, from my understanding, predominantly a masculine energy side, and the other being predominantly the feminine. And just had
exactly.
this thought, is that the Adam and Eve story? And out of that, is that where the ego situation came from that story? I don't know, just tossing it out there and seeing what you may think of that, or is it way out there in left field?
Well, I had never particularly thought of it in those terms, but that makes perfect sense. I think that's a powerful way to look at that story and understand it on a whole different level, and especially to be able to apply it.
Wow. It just hit me, and it made sense from this end. I just wanted to share it and see what thoughts you might have.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Amazing.
You know, you look at people who are still trying to prove that there were 7 24-hour days in creation, and the book that they're reading from says, oh, to the creator, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. Why does it have to be 24-hour days? A day in the creative process, and in Aramaic, the phrase that's been translated as a day is more appropriately translated as a time period. It could have been 12 million years. Why are we arguing about that? Is there something to learn here instead of trying to be right? Is there something we can apply to ourselves and improve our ability to function truly as humans, rather than arguing about, well, I believe this, I believe this. Well, go for it, and maybe there's another level. But yeah, I'll, you've triggered some thought for me, and I will definitely spend some time with that idea of the left and right hemispheres. And you know, the left side of the brain being literal ABC, 7 days, and the right hemisphere being metaphorical, symbolic, comprehending on a whole different level, and as Adam and Eve, as coming from that source, and then to me, ultimately being able to integrate them makes perfect sense. So thank you for that thought. Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, I'm grateful to be able to think about it, discuss it, and have this opportunity on the show to speak about these things. And as well as everything you shared today, it's wonderful, and we'll be more in touch on this, and appreciate you all very much and the work.
Awesome, good sir. It's a delight to chat with you, and I'm so glad you're free of those headaches. I'm blessed. It's something that's never been a challenge for me, but I can identify with the people who did have, and it's a tough way to go through a day, so glad you're alleviated of that one.
Tough way to go through a good portion of the week where I was about 45 years ago. And come a long way since, and I'm looking forward to this new road. It's going to be wonderful. It's been for a couple of years now, and increasingly getting much better. So very grateful to you all, and for the time and discussion today.
All right, my friend. Delight to hear from you. Extending love in your direction. Appreciate you, and I'm sure that everybody benefited from your thoughts today. So.
Blessings and love, and hello to everyone, and all the best. We'll talk again, Michael and Jeannie. Thank you.
All right, take care. Lots of love. And we're down to the last minute or so, so I'm just going to say thank you, everybody, for joining us. Hope that you each choose to create the best year yet of your eternal lives, with each one becoming successively better. Moving onward and upward and looking at every thought, every bit of mind energy that could drag you down, that could create chemistry that would deteriorate your physiology. And literally, on a minute-to-minute basis, looking at when those things are moving and you being able to step back from your own mind, become the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions, and just observe it in operation. And if it isn't love, forgive it, get rid of it, dump it. Your physiology doesn't need it.